This is listener-supported radio for Northeast Texas, 88.9 KETR, and streaming at KETR.org. I'm host Matt Menke, and today it is my pleasure to share with you a music discovery out of Austin, a man who has been writing songs, albums worth of songs, for a few decades now, but had yet to release any of these songs publicly until the debut album Euphoriophobia came out in 2024. It's an eclectic release that deals with a wide range of emotions, and hopefully this is just the start of many music releases to come for today's special guest, Chris Robeson. Chris, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for the opportunity to learn more about you and your music. Welcome to Notably Texan.
Howdy, thank you for having me.
So I know that you're based in Austin now. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Houston. I moved around a lot as a kid, lived in like 12 different houses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was born in California, actually. Don't tell anyone. But, I moved here when I was around one year old, and I grew up in Houston, Northwest, and then graduated high school actually in the Detroit area. My parents moved to Massachusetts after that, and I was like, well, I have no reason to be up here anymore. So I always wanted to go to UT, so I moved back down to Austin as soon as I could. I've been in Austin for 18 years now.
Nice. Well, obviously, yeah. That's a good place to be for somebody musically inclined like yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of double-edged sword, really. I mean, they say it's live music capital of the world or whatever, but I've lived in other cities where, you know, the local music scene was more front and center. I feel like there's so many musicians in Austin that no one cares. It's so saturated that no one, like, I went to this show for my friend's album release party the other day. His name is Sean Pander, like, amazing artist, amazing voice. And, you know, he ended up, you know, having to pay his band out of pocket and didn't really make any money. You know, people don't, there's so many acts in Austin that's kind of self-defeating.
No, I get it. It's kind of like actors in California, right? I mean, it's oversaturation, yes.
What do they say? Don't wear a gold watch in a gold mine.
There you go. Right. Well, Chris, how did you come to find your love for music? Was that an early realization for you?
I got my first guitar Christmas when I was 13. And, you know, it did take me a little bit more to find, like, who my heroes were. And they happened to be in my parents' generation, you know. But, you know, I was the typical kid listening to what was ever on the radio everyone else was listening to. But it's kind of when I found the Beatles and the Doors that kind of things opened up for me. And then from there, found all my folk heroes, you know, the John Prine, Townes Van Zandt, and Guy Clarks of the world. And that's kind of what set me off on wanting to be a writer.
Understandable.
Like, my love for music and the weirdness in music came from classic rock, but the writing and the narrative style came from old folkies.
I imagine at some point you did what most younger people do, is kind of rebel a bit, maybe get into some kind of weirder stuff that your parents weren't into, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. My first concert, my parents had a rule I couldn't go to. They were kind of sheltering. They're like born again Christian, evangelical a little bit. And I couldn't go to a concert till I was 16, but the rule was I got to pick whatever I wanted, and I picked Primus. And,
okay, nice.
My mom sits down. She's like, okay, so who did you choose? I'm like, I'm going to go see Primus. Okay, let's listen to that.
Oh, no.
I put it on. She found, well, I don't know, it was Big Brown Beaver.
Okay, yeah.
And, she's like, oh, no. She's shocked. Like, no. My dad's like, no, honey. He told me to pick whatever you wanted.
Nice. Wow.
I like the weird stuff, like Ween, Primus, Flaming Lips, you know, kind of a little bit more avant-garde style stuff. I just like the musical philosophy of Anything Goes.
Love it, man. Well, that's a little bit of what we do here on this program, so I can definitely get behind that. Well, you know, as much of an annoyance as labeling styles of music can be, how do you describe mm-hmm. your sound to the uninitiated if you're giving like an elevator pitch to somebody that you've got a new album out? What kind of music do you tell someone that you do?
Well, that's always been difficult because even choosing tracks for a record, like this one's more normal. I have a lot of, you know, stranger stuff and styles. I wanted this album to sound cohesive, but I guess I just say like Americana or progressive Americana. For this style, but then there's the songs like Fool's Gold, which are more like indie rock, kind of Beck-ish. So I don't know, I feel like we are pretty much post-genre at this point.
That's
I wish
true.
It would be. Sometimes it's annoying to try to write in a box, but yeah, Americana.
And that, and you know, Americana itself is a pretty wide encompassing thing too. So that works,
yeah,
for
so
sure.
It's safe to just kind of put it in that bucket because it's already so broad, right?
Yeah. Well, the release of your 2024 debut record, Euphoriophobia, was a welcome surprise that added you to my arsenal of songs here at Notably Texan. And although this is your first release, it's really not your maiden voyage into creating music. Do you remember when you penned some of your first songs?
Oh, yeah. I started, there was this program called Acid. Messed around with the electronic sounds. The first songs I made were just like these little bastardized drum loops and weird pitch shifted vocals and stuff, and but I started like writing more seriously around when I was like 16.
Okay, so I mean, was but some of that early stuff? I mean, I don't know that techno probably wouldn't be the right description for it, but almost bordering more on electronic though.
Yeah. The first stuff was electronic, and you could say techno, but they were like techno songs that are making fun of techno.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
They were like a parody of themselves.
Okay. Nice. Well, man, I love this the eclectic nature of kind of where you've come to today with all this stuff that you were brought up on. I can definitely appreciate that a lot. Well, as I understand it, you have a veritable vault full of albums and songs that you've been working on through the years. And if it's not weird for me asking, why have you kind of kept these to yourself all this time?
Well, I mean, a lot of it was just my own personal psychological, you know, imposter syndrome, that old story, you know, thinking things weren't good enough. And what was funny is whenever I used to, before I started professionally producing with like really talented musicians and who are on this record, when I was just me, it's like I was more willing to put my stuff out. I had like a YouTube channel and I just made a bunch of avant-garde stuff and I put it out there with no care in the world. But once I started like actually believing in it, like, oh, I got some good songs here, then I started keeping them closer to the chest for some reason.
Okay.
Like, because now, like, instead of being able to fall back on, like, oh, it's a joke, or like, oh, obviously it's bad because, you know, whatever, I had to be like, oh, no, now I want people to think it's good too. And so that kind of added another layer to being hesitant to release, right? Yeah, it was just a psychological barrier. I'm glad it's finally, I feel like I've cleansed it, and now I'm excited to put more music out. But I don't know, I wanted a good first step forward. I'm kind of a perfectionist, so I had a couple of the records done, but I was like, there's something still off about a couple of the songs, or I listen to the vocal. Like, for me, as long as I don't make myself cringe when I listen back to something, I'm like, okay, it passes my filter. And you know, I got a very fine filter for what makes me cringe in my own vocal. So listen to some of those old records, I'm like, I need to go re-sing those or whatever, you know?
Right.
Because I got some limitations with my primary instrument, my voice, and so I try my best to lean on character or whatever to compensate. So sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes the character's not right, or I don't believe, you know. It's really important, like, I don't care as much about the quality of a vocal as much as I care about, do I believe it? Yeah.
We're speaking with Chris Robeson on 88.9 KETR. His record Euphoriophobia is out now. And Chris, you've got some primo talent backing you on the album. Do you want to talk about the players behind you?
My producer is Gabriel Rhodes. He's also the guitarist, and he does a lot of the keyboards and stuff like that. He's a very talented cat, good ear. He's also my primary writing partner. I just wrote another Christmas song with him the other day. He's just my favorite person to write with, because I do a lot of co-writes, and a lot of times you don't have the chemistry there, but you're always trying to find someone else that you implicitly understand. And for me, that's him. We get it. We just pump him out, you know. So he's the primary creative force with me, co-produced. And then for drums, we have John Chinman. He's in the Resentments, a couple other bands around town. He like kind of drums with everyone in the city. On bass, we got Matt Slagle. He's Pat Green's bassist. People, I'm sure your audience knows him, who Pat Green is.
Of course.
Oliver Steck plays trumpet, accordion. We got Guy Forsyth on harmonica, and he plays the saw. The percussionist is Ilya Janos Kalas. talented. He's kind of one that goes in there, fills in all the shakers and all the interesting sounds, percussion wise. Sean Pander, my friend I was just talking about. Like I said, he's got this great soul voice, but he's credited on the record for dog barking.
Okay.
On Fool's Gold. I took the guy with the best voice I knew, and I made him bark like a dog.
Okay. I noticed the dog bark, but I didn't know that it wasn't a dog, so nice work on that.
You know, we found one of those, like, kind of those concrete barriers on the road. Sometimes they're sleeved with, like, a PVC tube.
Yeah.
So we had one of those in the studio. He was just, like, shouting in it. He wasn't even trying to bark. It just ends up sounding like a bark because of the way the resonance of the tube is working.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm definitely familiar with a lot of these names. I know John Shipman was in Band of Heathens for a while, and we're big fans of Guy Forsythe here. So you definitely recruited some great people to play with you.
They help put lipstick on the pig, okay. So to speak, you know.
Well,
yeah, they're kind of validating having, like, these really good session players on a record. It's like, all right, man.
Absolutely. We were talking a little bit about some of the people who helped create it, but I love the sonic collage of unusual instruments on some of the album cuts. Everything from Guy Forsythe's singing saw to a sitar and the what I thought was an actual dog bark, but it turns out was a human bark that you were describing a minute ago. It really seems like you and Gabriel Rhodes kind of dug quite deep to make this album sound unique.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I always want every song to sound like its own movie. You know, that's kind of, I try to write them a little more theatrically and character-based, and so you want the sonic atmosphere to be as unique as possible for each song, while also having it be cohesive. You know, I like it. I want to be eclectic and have a bunch of different styles, but we chose all the songs that kind of match the same flavor. So at that point, it's like, okay, how do we make them all their own thing at the same time?
It's unusual. It takes you on a lot of twists and turns as you go through the whole album. I've heard you talk in other interviews about mainly performing as a singer, songwriter, solo act in the past. So how are you adjusting to kind of working with a band, whether it's in studio or on stage?
So on stage, I still have never played with a band on stage.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I still I never did an album release show for this thing, although John, much to the chagrin of John Shipman, the drummer, who's been like trying to get me to take that step. But I still just play solo everywhere. It's a lot different. In the studio, it's pretty much the same. I can just kind of hire the players to round out the sound. But as far as actually cutting it myself, guitar and vocal, it feels the same.
For people that don't know how the sausage is made, very rarely are bands all playing their parts at once in the studio like you see on an old Beatles documentary or something. A lot of this stuff is kind of done individually, overdubs and this type of a thing. So I can understand that. I mean, do you have plans to maybe perform with a band at some point?
Yeah, that's the end goal. It hasn't materialized yet, and that's mostly for me dragging my feet. That's what I ultimately want. Yeah, of course. In the studio, I'm talking about the sausage made. There's a lot of overdubbing that's done, but the way these songs go, the drummer, the bassist, and me playing and singing at the same time, and then all the, you know, everyone else comes in afterward, like all the lead electric guitar parts and stuff. But the skeleton is there from the get-go.
Chris Robeson is my guest today on Notably Texan. This is 88.9 KETR. Now, Euphorophobia is a record that touches on some pretty heavy subjects at times, and I believe that your intent was to create something that's both thought-provoking and therapeutic, if I understand correctly. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, that was a lot of these songs were written during COVID, and during COVID, I had like four people close to me take their own lives and stuff. And so a lot of it stemmed from that, and also my own issues with, you know, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, all that fun stuff. So when I was picking the songs, they all kind of centered around the last song on the record, which is I'm Coming Home If You Let Me, which is a song written about my uncle. And the other one, Feel the Good Things Too, which is kind of the more cheery, hopeful song on the record, which sits right in the middle of it. So I had this idea to create this whole arc of this character who, you know, he's having trouble. And then, you know, feel the good things too, just being like, you're going to feel everything, all the negative emotions in life so strongly, you might as well, when you're feeling happy, lean into that as well. But then ultimately the song, the record ends with three very, very down songs. So this character kind of loses the battle a little bit, but, I just wanted to make something for me, like a self-help record that other people maybe could relate to, but it's not all that. I threw some other flavors in there, but that was the main overarching concept.
And I mean, the title itself, I think, is it kind of an allusion to yourself as well, Euphoriophobia?
Yeah. The fear of happiness. I heard it from some YouTube video. This therapist was talking about some, I don't know, disorder. She used it and it struck me right away. And then I saw the album artwork, which is a painting that John D. Graham did. And it was hanging on Gabe's wall. And I was like, oh my God, that's the perfect concept for fear of happiness. Like the dead bear not even letting his angel leave. Like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Get back down here with the rest of us.
Yeah. The benefit of radio, you don't get to see this, so you might want to check out the album artwork for Euphoriophobia, which is the debut for our guest, Chris Robeson. Well, I'm always interested to hear my guest's comments about public radio when I get the opportunity. And as KETR prepares to serve Northeast Texas in our 50th year, could I hear your comments about listener-supported radio, Chris? I know that Austin, of course, has a long tradition of some great public radio there, but is that something that you appreciate? And tell me your take on it.
It's kind of gone the way of the dodo bird a little bit, which is sad. A lot of people don't listen to the radio. I still do. I exclusively listen to KUTX in Austin because they're the people who they play the kind of the most eclectic music and also the most local artists. So it's kind of it's always a goal. Like I haven't gotten played on KUTX yet. I love that radio stations are such as yourself are playing my music. But for me, I will feel like I've kind of made it when KUTX plays one of my songs, you know. Radio it still has its place and. It's where a lot of people still find music other than, you know, algorithmic Spotify suggestions and stuff. So it's the human side of music still. So I hope it never goes away.
Well, we are proud to do our part here in Northeast Texas. And I would wager to say that we're the only place that you could discover an artist like Chris Robeson here on Notably Texan. And I'm so happy to have you checking in with us today. Now that you've broken the ice with this debut release, and you alluded to this earlier, what's your plan for this load of songs that you've got in reserve?
Yeah, I'm in the process right now of I have everything organized in the folders and on a Dropbox of every song, and I'm trying to put them in a different bucket. So my girlfriend was helping me, and Gabe is helping me. I have like 10 or 11 potential records. future ones, and I'm putting them all in the bucket, see what belongs with what, trying to come up with a kind of the next concept, because I love the idea of a concept record. Everyone's putting singles out now and everyone's kind of just picking their 10 best songs and making a record out of it. It's a good philosophy too, but I kind of want to keep making it's going to be completely different than this one. It's either going to be the really weird kind of more rock focused record, or it's going to be my stripped down kind of like John Prine. I got this one song, Water from the Hose, that everyone seems to like, and it's kind of, you know, more earthy. So I'm thinking about kind of just doing a record of that without so much production and just about the songs, you know, kind of like a Guy Clark stripped down man and a guitar thing.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the sky's the limit, and it's really great to have so much already done. I'm sure there are many artists out there who are kind of hit a brick wall where they're like, man, I need to do another album, and I can't, you know, I've got writer's block or whatever. You've got the opposite problem of, man, which songs do I pick that I've already done through the years here?
Right. Well, I guess I'm lucky in that, is that maybe because of all my hedging that I did the heavy lifting up front.
Yeah.
With the writing.
Well, man, do you have any big plans for the holidays? Is this a time of year that you enjoy? I know it's happy for a lot of people, and not everybody enjoys it. So, I mean, where do you sit on the holidays?
A little bit ambivalent, I guess. I still, I don't have as much cheer. Like, my girlfriend was trying to watch all the Christmas movies in one night, and I'm like, okay, I'm kind of Christmased out. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm not a Grinch about it or anything either. Most of my family lives in Central Texas as well. I moved here first, and then everyone was spread around the country, and they all found their way here. So,
oh, good.
I will be spending time with family, and that'll be nice.
Nice. All right. Well, I hope that whatever you do, you and yours certainly enjoy it. And, man, I am so glad that you have opted to start releasing your songs. I would not have discovered you otherwise because I'm not there in Austin. I know that you're undoubtedly entrenched with all these talented folks there, but we're way out here in Commerce, so I might not have found out about you otherwise. So thank you for what
you... Thank Adam for that.
Well, yes, and you definitely made the right decision getting with Adam Dawson, who's a great music promoter who's gotten us in touch with a lot of names that I would have otherwise missed, and you are included in that list. So you're a welcome addition to the show here, and I want to wish you the success and recognition you deserve. Thank you so much for joining Notably Texan today, Chris.
Thank you for reaching out. It's a pleasure.
And I'm Matt Menke. I'd like to say thanks once more to Chris Robeson for the great interview today, and also massive appreciation to Adam Dawson with Broken Jukebox Media for connecting us. More about the artist is available at chrisrobeson.com. That's R-O-B-E-S-O-N. And we're at ketr.org. Thanks for listening.